Welcome to Season 4 of Healthcare Fraud Shield's podcast. As a reminder, Healthcare Fraud Shield is a software as a service company focused solely on fraud, waste and abuse, cost containment, and payment integrity. You can find more information about our various modules and offerings at our website at www.hcfraudshield.com. Hello, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 1 of the Healthcare Fraud Shield podcast. My name is Karen Weintraub, and if you've listened to our podcast before, you've heard me speak before, so I'm going to do the opener session this round, and then I'm going to bring in a number of different guests throughout our different podcast sessions throughout the year. And this season is going to be a season of firsts, so I thought we would just talk about what we remember as our first real case. So maybe not the first case that fell on your desk, but the first one that had all the components of a real fraud investigation. So I'm going to go first today, and in our future sessions, again, I'll bring on some guests from actually our organization, some of our different investigative staff and our clinicians, and we'll just kind of share our experiences. So when I think about my first real case, the one that always comes to my mind is one that really had all the different pieces to it. I looked at data, referrals had come in, we gathered documents based on things that were in our internal systems, we went on site, we did interviews, we reviewed records, we talked to the attorney. There was just all the different pieces of an investigation. So I'm gonna walk you through kind of what happened and how it happened. And really, I reflect back on it. It was really an interesting learning experience for me. And I still use that in a lot of lessons that we engage in today. So first of all, it started off with several different referrals. There were some of members that were complaining about claims not being paid, or they didn't see the particular provider that they saw in their explanation of benefits. And it turns out the practice, and I'm not going to get into too many specifics, obviously, to keep it kind of high level, but there was a father and son practice, and one of them was participating with the insurance company, and one wasn't. So thinking about the different product types and lines of business we were working with, those that had HMO plans did not have out-of-network benefits. So if they went to see the son who was not participating, then they would be responsible for the dollars associated with the claim because it was considered out-of-network. And a lot of things, you know, even to this day, you know, there's some automation where, you know, members get notified of, you know, what's covered, what's not covered. And when people would see this, they'd get really concerned. So started to see a pattern of some of this, reviewing call logs, and started to see not just in the data, but in call logs as well, the practice asking a lot of questions about, you know, what type of benefits each patient or each member has. Then when we gathered all of the data, and for those who know me, you know, the data part is really one of my favorite areas, is just, you know, looking at all the different patterns and trying to figure out what's happening. When you saw a scenario where a claim got denied, if it was submitted for a patient who had an HMO plan, and if it was submitted with the non-participating provider, the son, you would see approximately 2 weeks later, you'd see a resubmission of that claim. And that claim would have the same patient name, same procedure code, same date of service, same diagnosis. All everything was the same except for the provider's name. They would submit it with the father's name who was in network, and then it would get paid. So at the time, because this was a little bit ago, I'm not going to date myself too much, we did not have analytics around that kind of activity. Of course, now in our tools today, that's, you know, easy to detect. But we would see that, and this was just an ongoing pattern. Things were denied, they'd be resubmitted, they changed the name. So thinking about how to approach this, we really thought the best approach would be, you know, because the father was a participating provider, Within that contract, we had the right to get records, which you have the right to get records whether they're participating or not, but we had the right to actually go on site to get the records and do an audit. So we reached out and scheduled an audit. While that was happening, of course, figuring out, you know, what member records do I want to try to get while we're on site? And we first looked at our internal systems just to see if there were any records in-house, just to make sure. I wanted to actually get copies of some records that we already had, just to see if anything was being altered in any fashion. So we created a sample list, and we had that list ready to go. And typically what we would do, I know everyone's process is a little bit different, is we would just confirm we're scheduled to be on site, you know, we'll see you there. So after that confirmation reach out, we received a phone call from the provider's attorney. That to me indicates a couple things. Either, you know, they just want to make sure that you know, that we're following all of the appropriate guidelines and contractual obligations and that we're not trying to take advantage in any way, and or that could potentially mean they have some concerns. So we did speak with the attorney, and we talked through what their contract stated and, you know, what we're looking to do. And we got the go-ahead, the attorney, I should say, let us go into the office, even though we were allowed to, according to the contract. And when we showed up, a couple of other things that were, you know, your antennas start to go up a little bit. The provider had actually cleared their calendar. They didn't have any patients there. And in other audits that we've conducted, that usually doesn't happen. It can. They want to minimize any disruption, totally understand. But in this particular case, they had completely cleared the calendar up until the afternoon. So we do a walkthrough of the office. We take a look where everything is. I asked to see where the records are housed. They showed me they were on another floor. But once we did that, the participating provider, the father, would not allow myself and my coworker at the time, remember, always travel in pairs, didn't allow us to stay where the records were. So after we did the tour, they put us in a spot, you know, away from anyone in case they were to walk into the office. Again, makes total sense. We don't want to be disruptive in any way whatsoever. And the provider asked for the list of the patients. So what would happen is we'd stand there and we'd wait, and we'd had our scanner machines, and the provider would go downstairs, and which is the other level where the records were, get about 4 to 5 of the records that we had in our list. I don't remember. I think we probably had somewhere around 25 or so that we were asking for. And then he would come back up and drop off those 4 or 5. And when we were done with those 4 or 5, he'd go back down and get the next batch of 4 or 5. But it took, I don't think I'm exaggerating, but again, it's been a while. I want to say a good 20, 25 minutes to pull 4 records. And it wasn't like it was that difficult. They were all organized, alphabetized. So we just kind of went with it. And this, you know, proceeded to go on throughout the rest of the day. We'd, you know, scan our records and give him the next set of 4 or 5. And that would just go on until we completed our business and we left for the day. So looking at the records, we did, you know, take a look at some of them while we were there, but obviously didn't go into it in great detail until we got back and was able to kind of comb through everything. But in the scenarios that we had identified where claims were denied, where the patient saw the son, and then claims were resubmitted where the patient had a claim from the father, what was happening and why, what we later learned, which we kind of figured while it was happening, but it was confirmed, is while we were waiting for those 4 or 5 or so patient records, the father was going through and adding his name to the records. So what was the nice thing about already having some of those documents in-house due to various reasons from other departments, appeals, whatever it was, we had the original copy and was able to see that that signature did not exist in the original copy. And it was taking so long because he was signing them, waiting for the ink to dry because of the type of pen he was using. It wasn't like, you know, your typical pen, and you could tell. And then bringing the records back up. So I can only imagine, I have these visions where he was maybe like blowing on the ink or waving his hand back and forth, you know, making sure they were trying to dry. But that explains why everything took so long. And there were so many pages to add his name to it. So we finished going through the records, identify those scenarios where they were trying to get paid for patients that didn't see the provider they billed it under, at least the second time. We found a couple of other things in the data and the claims data compared to what the records look like. Minor upcoding, just a number of different scenarios. And like we normally do, we write up an audit findings report that explains out in detail everything we found, our resources to back it up, you know, why we found it, anything contractual that needs to be added to it, you know, just putting all of your ducks in a row and identifying all the areas of concern. And that letter gets sent back out to the provider. So this is kind of normal, typical process. Once all of that occurred, as I expected, that same attorney who had reached out to us prior to the audit had reached out through the mail, and this started this, I don't even remember how long, but months long of communication, written back and forth and back and forth. I am not a lawyer, but that was our protocol, was for us to actually, for the most part, with some exceptions, we wrote our own responses back to the attorneys. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just different approaches based on resources and processes. But I come from a family of lawyers, so it kind of felt a little bit good to have, you know, some experience on how lawyers operate. And we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And this lawyer tried, I think, everything to intimidate me a little bit, not trying to be mean, but trying to say that I didn't know what I was doing, and said a lot of different things, which is can be, you know, normal in this kind of back and forth. It's really the start of negotiation. And finally, after several rounds of all of this, we decide to meet in person, and we do. And the gentleman comes up to me, introduces himself in person with a big smile on his face. And I kid you not, the first words out of his mouth were, "I have to tell you, I have really enjoyed our communication," which put a smile on my face and really lightened up the mood of the meeting, because our facts were solid. And he knew it. His client knew it. But I think he might have been surprised with the level of detail and the ability that we had to kind of counter the legal arguments that he tried to make that we found had no merit. So in the end, we did settle the case. And then after we were done settling the case, the lawyer, again, in one of our in-person meetings, said, "You know what, again, I've really enjoyed working with you. It's been a pleasure. I would love for you to be a part of speaking on various panels when it comes to fraud." And it was really an interesting experience on all levels. But that part was the part for me that I enjoyed the most. It showed that we were doing it right. The lawyer knew it, respected it, and had enough respect for what we're doing to say, maybe we can join forces and help to educate people in the end of this. So we did settle. Of course, all of that's confidential, and I won't, and you know, including who the lawyer is. But you know, really was a wonderful experience in a way. I don't know if people would often use that word in some of these, but it really was, because we learned all these different things from this case. You know, the data, the interview, the on-site visit, all these little cues that we were picking up on while we were on-site throughout the process. You know, gathering information from inside the organization, from outside the organization, and being able to effectively communicate and effectively negotiate with this attorney, and to have the kind of working relationship we did was one of the experiences that I really reflect on. And it was really, I think of it again as kind of my first, you know, case with all these different components to it that really went from kind of start to finish with all these different pieces. So I wanted to share one of my first experiences. And again, I'm going to bring on some of our staff. They're going to share some of their first experiences, and we'll get to chat about some of that. And as always, you can reach out to us and share your experiences, and maybe there's things that we can kind of compile as some kind of playbook for our first cases. But if you'd like to reach out to me directly, again, my name is Karen Weintraub. You can reach out to me via email, kweintraub, which is kweintraub, at hcfraudshield.com. And again, our website is www.hcfraudshield.com if you have any questions or need anything. And I look forward to being able to have this discussion with some other folks as well. So thank you for listening. And hopefully, it's about 15 minutes. You were able to go for maybe a quick walk or take a little break from whatever else you're doing in the day and listen to something, hopefully, that you found interesting. So thank you. Take care.